Everybody, welcome to Magic the Amateuring. Thanks for joining us. I'm Maria, one of your magic amateurs. Over to my right is also Megan, another magic amateur.
Yep, or in a mirror. Nope, I'd still be on your right. Never mind.
And Ben.
And I'm Ben, and I'm an amateur and a fosterer of new amateurs.
You gave birth to us.
I create them like a muffin man might make muffins.
I'm blueberry.
I'm apple cinnamon.
But on my insides, I have jelly.
I'm just normal muffin.
I'm a plain vanilla muffin.
Oh God, vanilla is not a muffin flavor.
That is not a
disgusting
type of muffin.
Absolutely disgusting.
No.
You might hear some other voice in the background. We have a very special episode today. We're being joined by some really good magic players, you guys.
Better
professionals.
Than me. Better than me.
Ben, how do you feel? You've been taken down a few pegs.
You know. Something I'm going to have
sore.
To learn to be okay with.
Very sore.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, Ben, you're not acting any different because of it.
Oh,
that's great. Yep.
Thanks.
Yep, you're welcome.
I guess I'm secure enough in myself. Is that what you're saying? Is that a compliment?
I mean, I intended it kind of as a diss, but however you're taking it.
Okay, then fuck you.
Stop fighting, you guys. Stop fighting.
Let's introduce our guests.
Let's do it.
We have actually a returning guest, Dave Yetka.
Yay. Welcome back, Dave.
Still alive. Hey, everybody.
We also have Matthias Hunt.
Hey there.
Hi. And we have Kyle. Kyle, I don't know your last name.
Kyle Stoll.
Kyle Stoll. And these guys are...
AJ Soccer.
AJ Soccer. Pretty much.
These guys are legit pros. And, they're like real. They play Magic for real. And they make millions of dollars doing it.
Millions.
Minus, take three zeros off that. Close.
They've made hundreds of dollars. Maybe reaching into 1,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we just had the opportunity to team draft against them, and we did, you know, fine.
we're not bloody and bruised.
No, physically,
we're fine. We're fine. Internally, I'm having a little internal bleeding.
Yep. I'm damaged.
Well.
Yeah.
TMI, ladies.
Oh my God. Well, thanks for joining us, you guys, and teaching us, giving us some knowledge onto our amateur brains.
Yeah. So can you guys, Matthias, maybe why don't you just give a rundown for anyone who's listening, maybe who has never team drafted before? How does it work? How is
it
different than normal
draft? So team drafting just happened in about the last half year. They started doing it officially. It happened unofficially forever. It is a 3-on-3 format, and it's like a normal draft. You sit in a circle, but you are not next to any of your teammates. So we are sitting every other person, and you draft all three packs. And at least it's a little different when you play in a tournament because they have to fit it into the round structure. But the traditional way of doing it is that you play everybody on the other team once. And so that'd be 9 matches, and whichever team gets to 5 wins the match.
And what happened with us?
We were not the team that got to 5 wins.
No, we were not.
Oh, drat.
I think we won 3 games total, or 3 matches total? 2 matches total?
Two,
yeah. I stunk. I lost twice.
And then one was pretty close, so I'm going to count that when I...
That's okay, yeah. Okay. All right.
I'm going to round up.
That's how it works.
When I tell girls about it later...
How many girls are you
been
to
the
You know, as many as there are at the public library.
Good strategy.
Yep.
They don't move too quick around there either. That's good.
No, it's like a wounded hunting ground.
That's creepy.
It's fun to be creepy in the library.
I thought it was quite fun team draft. I'd never done it before. And it was neat because you have to really consider... not only building your deck as best it can be, but screwing other people in the hellhole, as it were.
Yep. I thought it was fun when I wasn't panicking. So it was like 3 minutes of fun, and then a lot of fight or flight mechanism in my brain.
That'd be a good split card.
So it's kind of like it was fun. Like Top Gun training is fun, right?
Yep. Sure. Yeah. I don't know what that's like.
Kyle, do you want to give us a rundown? Like, what's the strategy? Is there a difference? Is there a significant difference in the strategy between a normal draft and a team draft?
Well, I mean, I am known in our team drafts for my deck is always usually the worst.
Cool.
And basically, I do is I try to train wreck the people around me, and that means that like I'll just like my first five picks I won't send. I'll just take always the best card, sure, regardless of what I already have. Okay. So I end up with like five like cards that are all different colors, and then of course it makes the people's around me deck bad because like I'm just cutting into their colors constantly. But if my deck's better than theirs, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like if they're all, if everyone's deck is bad but mine's slightly better, it's fine.
Because every deck is either counting for your score or counting directly against your score.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Right. You want to have a deck better than the person you're passing to, and outside of that, it doesn't really matter how good your decks are.
Okay, sweet. Wow. So just slightly better than average. That sounds like something I can go get in for.
Sounds like my IQ, right?
Totally, yeah. I would say solidly slightly above average.
And today was also the first day that Megan and I ever drafted Dragon's Maze.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, first time.
Two firsts at once.
that same sentence that I said earlier applies to that as well. Like 3 minutes of fun and a lot of like, haha, shit.
Megan, you were really freaking out.
I really was.
You spent a lot of the draft process just passed out.
Yep. Thank you, Maria, for always supplying smelling salts.
You're welcome.
Yep.
So, Dave, do you want to give us a rundown? Just gate crash. What's the deal?
No.
What's the deal with gate crash?
Dragon's Maze. What's the deal? We're in a new world. How are things different?
I am actually probably not the one of us three to talk to about that.
All right, then shut up.
All right. Well, let's hear you drafted twice.
Why don't we hear your take and then we'll hear Kyle with that.
Well, I really like that it's three different sets. I really hate it when it's just all three one pack, because it's just a lot more vanilla. You are usually, you know, it's just a lot of similar decks and shit. Because
you just like the variety.
Yeah, I like the variety. There's a lot more options open. When it's all one set, you can sit down and be like, this is the best deck, or these are the best, you know, for this archetype. But when you add a bunch of sets, there's a lot more interactions, plus different cards. You know, like Gatecrash and Return to Ravnica were never together, so, like, there's interactions there, but no one was really testing them until now, you know, so I like it. As far as, like, pick order and all that shit, I don't really know yet, but the card quality is very high, higher than the other two, I'd say.
I said this before, but I got the distinct feeling when I was drafting Dragon's Maze, I was like, these cards are sweet, as I was taking them and passing them. And when I cracked open Gatecrash, I was like, oh god, fuck these cards. And I was wondering if it was perhaps just because I had played with them before and was familiar with them and knew which ones were not so good and which ones were good, or maybe the power level was just lower.
I think there's a higher like percentage of gold cards in Dragon's Maze, so, and I think the gold cards tend to be more powerful, so that might be the reason.
Yeah, I think Dragon's Maze, most of the cards are more standalone powerful. Like, you have a lot of cards in the other sets, you know, like a Rootborn Defenses or a card that kind of needed a lot going with it to make it good, and most of the Dragon's Maze cards you can just play as a body, and you know they work as advertised.
Okay, so maybe the Gatecrash and RTR cards were rewarding you for being in the archetypes.
Well, yeah, because when you're playing, you know, when you were drafting, say like triple RTR, Reborn Defenses was a pretty sweet card in the right deck. But I mean, that's like a card that's
Mortis really, Strider.
Yeah, Mortis Strider is pretty good in Dimir. You can't really do anything with that anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, but all the Dragon's Maze cards you can just, you know, it's a blue card. You put it in your deck with islands, and it's probably okay.
Yeah.
Like, they all kind of look that way.
Okay, cool. Kyle, how about you? What is the secret if I want to win at Dragon's Maze?
I think,
let's say I'm playing people that aren't very good.
Oh, in that case, your advice? Probably take Beetleform Mage. I like that guy. No, I like that. But in all seriousness, I think that it's really important in Dragon's Maze, when you're drafting like an 8-man, to figure out what guild you are getting past pack one. Okay. And like, you need to identify, like, basically what's very important is, because the guilds are divided in the second and third pack, like a lot of people will get into the habit where they're like, they'll get past like three very good Selesnya cards and they'll be like, I don't want to do that because I'll get awkward pack two. But it doesn't matter because there's no Selesnya cards in pack two.
Right.
So if like the guy to your right is going to pass you like Selesnya, like take it because he's going to pass you Selesnya pack three.
Right.
It's like very important to identify that and like keep track of what you're passing. Like if you're passing Simic or like if you're passing like a lot of Beetle Form Mages or Tithe Thrinkers pack two, like you need to be aware that like you're not going to get Orzhov or Simic pack two.
Yeah, so whether you're going into a Gatecrash deck or Gatecrash guilds, if you're trying to go two-color, which, like, I find my best decks have been two-color. More of my decks are three-color than two, but the really good ones are two-color. You need to figure out, like, whether or not you're doing a Gatecrash guild or an RTR guild actually will affect how you draft it.
Okay, so would you guys say that you still want to have one main guild?
If possible, I think... I mean, all the guilds, when you drafted them the first time, kind of had their own strategy or way they approached the game. And, like, for example, I did manage to draft an almost, like an Izzet deck in one of our practice drafts the other day. And, it looked a lot like your Izzet decks from RTR. You know, it was almost all red creatures, and I basically threw auras on them and played burn spells.
Okay.
And it was very, very good. But that's not always going to come together, so you can't count on it. But when it does happen, it's still pretty good.
I mean, there's certain two-color guilds that are, like, play alone, or don't play well with others. Like, I think Gruul, like, the aggro Gruul deck is, like, you can't really... It doesn't pair well with any other color other than black, really. Because just, like, the nature of the cards don't go well with, like, white or blue.
Okay.
So, like, there's certain guilds that you have to, like, be...
There's like no good way to draft Naya.
Yeah, exactly. Like, drafting Naya, I haven't figured out as, like, plausible. Okay. So.
It's like, don't wear plaid pants with a polka dot shirt.
Amen, sister.
Thanks.
So, mana fixing, guys. How many clue stones is too many clue stones?
We had an episode that was all about mana fixing, our last episode, so we're going to just go even deeper.
Yeah, now you're going to correct us.
Yes.
I haven't played more than four yet, but
I did play four number in
this, like, four-color, like, mono-removal spell deck, and it was fine.
Yeah.
But, I mean... I think, like, optimally in your control decks, you're looking for, like, 2 to 3, and in your aggro decks, you're preferably playing 0.
Yeah. For example, like, we didn't really play key runes much as mana accelerants. Like, the key rune ramp decks were all pretty bad. And I think, like, the clue stone ramp decks are also pretty bad. If you're playing a control deck where you just use them as mana fixing, and then throw them away when you're done with them, then I think it's pretty, then I think they're okay. But yeah. I don't want to ramp into things with clue stones.
The way I feel about clue stones is... There's a lot of times, like in these sets too, you're going to be three colors a lot of the time. So I think of them more as fixing. Like, it's really hard to be three colors and not get color screwed if you don't have good fixing. So then using clue stones is really nice because it helps a lot. So do the key runes.
So it's basically like in the first pack, if you have a pack where there's not something really cool going on for, you're taking a couple of really good cards... And there's a bunch of mediocrity in the pack, and you're like, oh, I could take this. It's like maybe I'm playing a black deck. I'm like, well, I could take this Maze Abomination, or I could take this Golgari Clue Stone. Like, I'd probably go toward the Golgari Clue Stone in that situation.
Okay.
I took more fixing than I've ever taken in my entire life.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think I had 10 fixing sources
by the time I was done.
That is a lot.
But my deck was okay, I thought.
I think I had more than that.
Okay. Did you notice you had to mulligan less than normal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you do it.
Nine or something like that. What are, like, the top five commons and uncommons you guys want to see when you open a Dragon's
Nest?
What's going to make you smile on the inside and the outside?
Commons, you have Beetle Form Mage, Zertaad Druid, Tithe Drinker.
Yeah.
The other two, I think you can make different. I think those three are for sure in the top
five. Golgari doesn't have a first pick. Kind of
wah, wah.
Yeah, Golgari's kind of awkward in the set, actually. The answer to the other two cards, you can come down to preference, I would say. Those three are the...
Okay.
The uncommons I really like.
Far and Away is very good.
Far and Away, I like Alive Well a lot.
First picking...
The 4-2 Rakdos.
Alive Well is really good.
Carnage Gladiator, is that his
name?
That
guy's very good. I like...
Gruul War Chant is possibly the best that's up there, too.
I like the Krasis card.
The arrest.
That card's actually very good because it's actually a split card, which is kind of nice. It's like a kicker or a buyback.
It's usually arrest, but then it has a sweet time when it's not arrest.
Yeah.
I've played it. I've had it twice, and it's been about 50-50, actually.
Interesting. Okay.
But
I had a Dead Bridge chant today as a mythic rare.
That was sweet.
This is the one that puts a bunch of cards in your graveyard, and then at the beginning of your upkeep, you pick one at random, and it either, if it's a creature, it goes into play, and otherwise it goes in your hand.
Right.
What? That sounds stupid.
It basically just got you a land every turn.
Yes, it did not work out great for me. Okay. I just heard a lot of people talking about it, how awesome it was, but it was kind of a hit to the gut to have it not affect anything when I played it.
Yeah.
And then the next turn, draw land. Yeah. And then the next turn, draw another land.
Yeah.
You know?
But you could definitely cast all your spells.
Yeah, I really could. But then I almost got decked, so. It was a risk. I don't know. So I don't know. I'm not crazy about it, but I don't know how you all feel.
No, I think the card's insane.
I've never played with it, so I don't know. I would first pick it mainly because I would want to try it. And then I would be, like, very leaning towards drafting lots of scavenger. Like, I would try and draft, like, a synergistic Golgari deck. Because right now, I think Golgari is, like, pretty bad. Like, I haven't figured out a way to make it work, and we've drafted, like, 7 times. Like, I actually tried before.
Yeah.
Like, last night I tried a deck, or a couple nights ago I tried a deck that had, like, the Drown in Filth type thing. It was awful. So, like, I'm not sure how you're actually supposed to make it work. Drown in Filth. Yeah. It's like you mill yourself 4, and it minus... X, you have to pick a guy, then you mill yourself 4, and then it minus it for your land.
Yeah, so it's like, is this going to be a kill spell? A Let's find out.
I mean, four if have more.
Like, yeah, if you have the chant. I like Grizzly the chant. Salvages. That chant seems good.
It's I mean, you played against me, it seemed insane. I, like, maybe there are things like, I don't know, I might take Gruul War Chant over it.
Oh, yeah, speaking for sure.
Of, you know, there's 2 different kinds of chants. I'd probably go with the uncommon one.
Seems I'd go for like, yeah. the
really good
chant.
In a removal heavy deck. Because you know,
yeah, if you're getting,
well, just like draws a card every turn and it cheats on
units. Well,
I think
right,
it's definitely better in control than it is in aggressive.
But yeah, you want to be playing for a late game because if you're playing this, you know, crappy Gruul or whatever,
Deadbridge Chant, Golgari Chant,
Golgari, yeah, deck with just like bad creatures. I don't know. It would have been fine in my deck, I think.
Yeah, like I definitely would have played it mine too.
Gregorian Chant. That's what I was trying to think of.
Gregorian Chant.
That would be a great card, but that's probably a white card.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Okay, so what kind of, like, are you guys still trying to make aggressive decks, or can you afford to, in this format, make slower decks, grindier decks, decks that are going to randomly get cards over the course of 7 turns?
I don't think any of us had an aggressive deck.
I mean, my deck was like the exact opposite of aggressive, and I think it was very good. But I mean, like, I still think you can draft aggressively. It's like,
yeah, I just
it's like not as, it's not like required like it was in Gatecrash.
I did feel like in the team draft we did that in every matchup I played, I was not like, I feel like in all 9 matches we played, your team were the aggressive decks in like all of the matchups, which is kind of.
Definitely.
Yeah. I felt like I was the control in all 3 of my matches.
Well,
yeah,
I think
that was the same.
In general, I think their decks had more creatures than ours.
Yes, I would agree.
Do you think that was a mistake on our part?
I think it has to do with team drafting. In team drafting, you like streamlined aggro, I mean, when it comes together, is really good, but you have 2 fewer packs, and you end up having to pick a lot more stuff that you don't want because you just keep seeing the same packs, so
and
you
plus,
want to go clunkier.
Maybe there's dicks taking your cards.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I can also screw you up. Like, all right, if I just take, you know, all right, you're playing... the thing about Boros is you can't splash in your Boros deck because it can be really bad if you splash. So if I kind of get you in Boros and then I take, a Sky Knight Legionnaire and then maybe take one other card from you, like, I can make your deck pretty bad. You can end up having to be an aggro deck with really bad creatures.
Sure.
Is that what you're trying to do to me? I was on your left.
You were on... No, I was playing... I was, for the most part, playing nice at that point.
Thank you.
Well, you don't always want to be mean to someone. Like, if you think you're opening better rares than the person you're passing to, it's okay to cooperate, because your deck's probably just better anyway.
Sure. Okay. So guys, based on your experiences, what guilds do you think have gotten better? What guilds do you think have gotten worse? We already talked about Golgari. That one
Golgari's
got worse,
worse,
you think?
Golgari's worse.
A little bit worse or a lot?
I don't even know how
well,
to draft
it. Well, it wasn't very good in the first set. Like, it was, like, probably the worst in Return to Ravnica.
Okay.
But it's, like, you can't... I don't know how the new strategy is, but you can't, like... the old strategy was, like, play Dagger Drum and put things on it. That was the old Golgari strategy. That was, like, the only really, like, comprehensive plan that worked. Or, like, that all-mono Axeman Guardian deck. Now it's, like, I don't know how you win with it. I can't figure it out, so...
If you get, good rares and uncommons, it helps,
Dimir is much better.
Yeah.
As an archetype. Because The blue-black cards in Return to Ravnica are very good that you get to play, and that helps a lot. Like, you don't have to play bad creatures anymore.
Because you can have Dead Revelers, which is a way more real creature than Dimir.
The Unleashed guys are just, like, very good in that archetype.
Okay. What are the good Dimir cards in Dragon's Maze? Like, the removal spell?
Far and Away is excellent. They have a Divination at common. That's fine.
Yeah. Usually want that blue-black.
I have to think about what the cards are.
That much. Like the 3/4 for 5, the -1/-0 is all their guys is exceptionally powerful.
Okay.
Yeah, okay,
sure.
Oh, yeah.
In one of our drafts, I had two of them at the same time in play, and it's like impossible to lose at that point. So they just can't do anything. Like you have 2 3/4s, and their guys are just like 0 or 1 power.
Yeah.
Ouch. Okay. I'm just happy to have some Unleashed dudes back for me. It's like some old friends.
But it sounds like...
Who are murderers.
I mean, it sounds like the decks that had pure aggro strategies, or the guilds that had pure aggro, must have gotten a little bit worse, right?
I think so. Yeah. Most, they aren't as streamlined. You know, you can't just... I'd say most of the aggro strategies got a little bit worse.
Yeah, I think just aggro as a concept got worse, too. Because I think you're way more likely now to go 3 colors.
Yeah, aggro really wants to be a 2-color deck.
I think... Like, or maybe 2 with a... Like, I always prefer 2 with a 3rd as a splash, because then you're a lot less susceptible to, like, getting color screwed, but then you're splashing for very good cards, so that's why you're splashing. But, like, you want 2 primary colors, you know.
I think Simic as an aggressive strategy didn't really lose that much.
Yeah.
Because, like, what you do get out of the... there's good Simic commons in the first pack, and, like, you don't really want that many evolved creatures anyway, because they don't evolve each other. Mm-hmm. So, like, you only wanted, like, maybe, like, 4 or 5, which... it's harder to get now. You're only going to get like 3 probably at most.
Yeah.
But like you get to play all the combat tricks from Return to Ravnica that are plentiful in green, like Giant Growth and stuff like that, and like Coruscant, which is just fantastic in your deck.
Aggro gets scarier because you don't actually. So say I want to build a sweet Rakdos aggro deck.
Yeah.
And there's all these Rakdos cards which I really like Gorehouse Chainwalkers or Augur Sprees or Hellhole Flailers. Like that's what makes my Rakdos deck good. But the problem is I'm going to have to move into Rakdos before the 3rd pack. And I might not open those Rakdos cards. And
you're taking a lot on faith.
Right, there's a lot of faith. Because whatever 2-color combination you choose, you have to choose it before you actually open the pack where you get the good cards for that guild.
Aren't you taking that same risk with any of the guilds from Return to Ravnica?
From Return to Ravnica especially, I would say. The thing is that you're not punished. Say if I'm drafting like a 3-color green control deck, like... I mean, there'll be something for me to take out of the RTR pack. It won't be so bad if I don't get those power cards. You know, maybe I'll just have to play something else, but there'll be something in the pack for me. Whereas Rakdos,
you don't want to, like, first pick Spawn, because that's the only Rakdos card in the pack.
Yeah.
You know, you'll play him, but, like, you don't want to be, like,
yeah, your first pick, a 5/3/5, the 6/4, and you're like, oh, that's really annoying.
Yeah.
Whereas with Golgari, like, okay, yeah, I first picked a Golgari Longlegs, I guess. That probably wouldn't even happen. There's probably a better card.
I hope so.
Like,
although
like,
that guy is...
He's not even that terrible. You know, you could first pick an Axebane Guardian if things are real bad. His legs are very long.
Yeah, what do you guys think is the cutest card in Dragon's Maze?
We're all wondering.
And on Dragon's Maze?
Yeah.
Pikachu.
He's in
Dragon's Maze.
Any card in this block, what is the cutest card?
My favorite card in the set is Launch Party.
Uh-huh.
It's adorable.
Because I always call it Lunch Party. I don't know why. But it's like I have a popper cube and I just call it Lunch Party.
Nice.
That's my favorite
card
in this
really
set.
Really well with Lobster Crew.
Yeah,
hey
lobster
guys, I'm having the Lobster Crew over for a lunch party.
I like the trained Caracal because it's both a cat and it gains life, and that's pretty
sweet.
So cool.
Is
Zurichi
Tiger.
Are both
Zurichi
pretty
Tiger.
Awesome.
They're
friends.
Lives.
Oh, sure.
That's why cats gain life.
I thought it was because like. If you're a single lady, you get a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
And then that's it. Yeah,
okay.
I like it.
I guess I have a different take on it.
Well, you do go to the library a
lot.
Then hand the books.
I just wanted to play a game called Getting to Know You.
Ooh.
And we already know Dave a little bit. He was our guest on episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know, what's your guys' deal in life? I mean, talk about playing, you know, at a higher level and how that's been for you. And, I don't know, just some of the things that have happened to you as you've chosen to do this. Because none of us have ventured into that arena yet. I mean, we're just babies.
Telling that story.
But, oh, come on, Barcelona's sweet.
Oh my gosh, do you have a sweet story?
You brought this up.
Okay. I'll tell the story. It's a little embarrassing. Okay,
we're about to hear an exclusive story.
One of the things when you're a quote-unquote pro Magic player, and we use the term loosely.
Very loosely.
Because you lose money playing the game. Yeah. So I don't know if you can call
but
it a profession.
But you also make it.
And yeah. Sometimes you have to spend a lot of money to make about
a lot of
what you
money
spent.
To make about a 3/4 of what you spent.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's
the payout's really rough.
Anyway, so we're in Barcelona, and that was last year for Black. Was that Black Constructed?
Yeah, that was the Ava Center Sword.
I don't really want to tell. Okay. No. So what happens is on all these events, you know, you're in foreign countries and, you know, what do people do in foreign... They party. That's what you do in a foreign country.
Get diarrhea.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
You don't eat the tomatoes?
Yep.
So I was with... I don't know if you guys... Do you guys know any professional players at all by name?
Oh, sure.
Let's try it.
Okay, well, we were with Michael Hetrick, if you guys know him, Ship It Hala.
Okay.
And Ricky Sitter, his friend, Sip It Hala.
And
Brandon Nelson, he's from Minnesota. And Andreas Prost from Alaska.
Okay.
And we went out for drinks. And so we go... We're in Barcelona. We go to the... drinking area. I don't know what it's called. Whatever. The place where you get mugged. Whatever that place is called. I don't know.
Where the alley?
Where the tourists alley. Go. Where the tourists go.
I feel like I know where the story is going.
No, I don't.
It's fun.
I'm going to leave some parts out. But okay. So we go to a bar and we're drinking and, you know, one of the things I want to try is absinthe because,
oh, for sure.
You know,
sure,
you can't get it here, so we try it.
It's not legal in this format.
So the night starts with Ricky. He orders 2 shots of absinthe. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll order 2. You know what I mean? Can't be shown up. And then he's like, well, 1 was for this guy. I'm like, oh. And then he orders another one, obviously, because he doesn't want to be shown up. So that's how the night starts. And
You don't know how it ends.
Well, not really. Anyway, we'll fast forward a little bit. We end up going to another place, and they shoo us upstairs because, you know, we're not sober and American, so they don't want us bothering the normal customers. And
Americans are really cool like that in foreign countries.
We're upstairs.
Yeah,
and
VIP treatment.
Yeah.
We drink a lot. Then all of a sudden we go downstairs, and we're with other Magic players, who is Gabriel Nassif and Paul Ritzel. Mm-hmm. And I think Yelger was there too. Yeah. And
I'm not actually here for any of this.
Yeah, we got thrown out of the bar.
Oh man.
And then one of my friends, like, they call a cab, but they forgot to, they didn't get in the cab
Andres
with me.
Also drunk.
Well, everyone is. I mean, no one's making crap decisions.
PBR. So
people are forgetting to tap their lava crews.
Yeah.
So here's what I find out about it, because, see, I'm back at our house, because I didn't actually know people were going out, the house we'd rented. And so apparently what had happened, because Kyle's only knowing this part of the story is only secondhand anyway,
I knew what happened.
Was that Andres put Kyle in the car, where he was going to try to get everybody in this taxi, but I guess the other people wouldn't get in or something. So Andres was like, he just told the cab driver the address and shut the door and set off Kyle.
The wrong address.
In the taxi. And Andres didn't know the address. So they, like, come back to the house, like, a couple hours later. He's like, man, well, did Kyle get home? I'm like, no, is Kyle with you? He's like, I don't know where Kyle is. Like, nobody... You know, this stays into, like, the next day. Like, we wake up and we still don't know. Yeah. Kyle's still not home. And we Googled... He actually told
Where's
him
Kyle?
An address that existed. Yeah. And we typed into Google, and it's, like, in the suburbs of Barcelona. So we're, like, kind of worried that, like, the cab driver has driven Kyle to the Barcelona suburbs at this point.
So I mean,
no one's cell phone works in Europe, so there's no way to get out of
them. Yeah, that's the problem. Anyway, I woke up the next morning, like, obviously, no idea where I was. I'm just, like, on a street somewhere, like, I have no idea, like, homeless, basically. I pull out my, you know, my head's pounding, obviously, like, and I pull out my wallet, and I'm like, there's no money in it. And I'm like, all right.
Did you have a tattoo of a Chinese?
No, yeah. I mean, I haven't found one yet.
It's probably somewhere.
But fortunately, we pre-bought Metro tickets.
Ah,
so, and it had like 4 trips on it still. And I'm like, nice, I can probably get back. So, like, I like walk for like probably an hour to try and find a Metro station. Cause I don't know where, like, I don't know which way any direction is. I have no idea where I am. So I'm just like mulling around.
Oh my
Just a random address. Well, I had to be fair, I had 2 days to find out how to get back. So
we were fairly worried we lost Kyle in Barcelona.
And then I found the metro and got back and went to sleep for an entire day.
You guys,
but that's what it's like to be a pro.
That's basically professional magic.
Wow.
Hey, I got like top 50 that event. It was very celebration. Yeah.
Well, you know, you're saying maybe you don't make a lot of money, but you certainly sound rich in life experiences.
Yeah. Oh yeah, right? I mean, I wouldn't take it back.
So why do you choose to play so competitively? What do you get out of it?
It's not so much what I get out of it. I think for me, it's I've lost the when you play at a like higher level, I have lost the enjoyment of playing at a lower level.
Ah.
So it's not fun for me anymore. Like, I play a lot of, like, I've been playing a lot of board games and stuff recently because it's like, I can actually still have fun doing that. Whereas, like, at this, it's like.
It's not to say that you always win at a lower level because, like, Magic,
no.
There's enough variance in it that doesn't happen. It's but, just, like, the games sometimes don't get, like, aren't as interesting.
I play, like, at a lower level of play, I feel like, I've ran through enough games that, like, they're all just reiterations of the same thing, but, like, just slightly different.
Wow.
Especially in Limited. It's like creatures are creatures, and, like, you can slightly change their text, but at the end of the day, Grizzly Bears is Grizzly Bears, even if he has some random ability that comes up once in five games.
Right.
That makes
me sick.
Sad.
Yeah, looking at you, Crawl.
Six. Get +3/+3. Heyo! I used that guy effect today. He was
you made him a 5.
Yeah. How many times did you use it?
More often.
Like once.
I want to activate him twice.
I used it once, but I had it up like a couple. Okay. Like once you get to 6 mana, they can't really block.
Well, like, and how many times did you have it in play where it wasn't relevant?
Oh yeah, I'm not saying he's.
So
not.
I'm saying like the percentage.
He's a chode. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. He's a chode, but.
So what's the best finish that all of you have had?
A pro tour or a GP?
Both.
I top 8ed the GP in Indy.
I took 8th in Nashville in 2010.
And then I got 11th at Worlds.
Okay. My best pro tour finish was like 22nd in Paris like 2 years ago. And then we took 9th in the team GP. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Not too shabby.
I just went PTQs.
Dave's won a lot. Dave's won a lot of PTQs.
Yeah, you beat me in the last one.
I just went PTQs. And
no big deal, right?
Pro Tours, yeah. Well, you know, my biggest Magic accomplishment is I knocked Conrad Kolos off the train.
That is excellent.
And he is a world-renowned douchebag.
Yeah, he's not on there anymore. He's a
world-class asshole. He needed to win a match against Dave to stay on the Pro Tour. And
at this time, I had one hand because I had broken my hand through a window. Through a feat of...
What?
Let's hear that one first.
Dave played an entire Pro Tour with one hand behind his back.
Yep.
Literally.
Day 2'd it.
You had
I had Michaela Melky, who's a wonderful young woman. She was shuffling my deck for me. And, you know, once the match started, I basically played the whole time. And everybody at this Pro Tour was fine with it. Well, I get up against Conrad Kolos, this world-renowned douchebag. And the first thing he says is, you know, what's the deal with this? You know, you guys could be colluding. And I'm like, first of all, you know, I'm not going to look at her. She's just going to shuffle for me. Then I pretty much do everything for myself, you know, after that. And he's like, if you even make eye contact with her once, I'm going to call the judge.
Oh, my God.
he's a pleasure.
Yeah. And some people really get taken aback by that. Like, he wears these bottleneck glasses without lenses in them. He's just like...
Yeah, he dresses like a hipster. And
what
he does is he, like, presents himself with this persona that he isn't to try and intimidate.
Which is, like, rehearsed. It's, like, it's way over the top.
His name is Jonathan, not Conrad.
I called him John the whole match. But...
Yeah.
There was, like, a story at Nationals, like, 2 years ago when they were reading off the top 8 and he top 8ed, like, no one clapped.
Yeah.
No. I don't feel sorry for him.
Booze.
No.
Because people were booing him.
Yeah, people were booing him. Yeah.
This is incredible. This is dark CD.
Or there's times when he's been like about to lose and then he'll call a judge and say he has to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, there was like that story where he's playing Josh. And it was at Nationals. He's playing like this guy in the top and he's like just dead. And he just like calls a judge and goes to the bathroom and comes back and Josh is like, okay, kill you. He's like, all right, I concede. Just like couldn't just wait. 10 seconds,
just a waste of time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, you never want to lose a game because you had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, that could have changed the outcome.
You could probably call a judge on, you know, some ruling on the board too. You could be like, I need the Oracle text on this card. Hold on 1 second.
No, he did get Josh I think in that match too, Josh did something and he didn't like.
He like lawyered him.
He rules lawyered the shit out of him, and he was trying to do stuff like that against me, but it was a pretty like he blew game two, and he won game one. Game two, as long as he blocked my stuff right, he would have lived. But I had Glorious Charge, which is a common. Or whatever, the when the pumps all your rank, guys, and he lost. And then game three, I just shit on him. And
that was gross. Just, wow. Oh, man.
You know what's really, really satisfying? Because
with one hand.
One hand.
With one hand.
And one butthole.
Fortunately, we had someone to wipe.
Yeah. Yep, but as far as, like, doing well, I haven't won a bunch of money or anything, but... That's well, okay.
Okay, now Megan and Maria, you guys say your top.
Our top finishes. Megan.
Oh, well, Maria.
I got third place in the Dragon's Maze pre-release sealed tournament.
Yeah, you did.
Better than I did.
Nice. Yeah.
Uh huh. My first draft I ever played, Mega Draft. I got third.
Wow! Congratulations.
Those are my tops.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I think. I mean. Judging by that story, I think we both win at not being douchebags.
Yeah, high five. So, what can we do to become like you guys?
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, you gotta be way more miserable.
Yeah. 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 First off, stop smiling right now.
Fear, less economically stable.
Yeah, do you have, do you have jobs? Decisions. Get rid of those.
Oh, man. I don't get much less economically unstable, guys. No,
more economically. Well, no, you just have to do exactly, like, if you don't have a job, then you have to do the exact same thing, but start, like, buying three times as many magic cards.
Sure. Okay.
But in all seriousness, you just have to play more.
Play against people who are better than you.
Yeah, you want to play against people who are better than you because you learn so much more.
Find out who those people are. Like, if you're the best player at your store, then, you know, go to a PTQ and find the guys who are winning the PTQs and, like, aggressively try to play with them. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get better.
Yeah.
Or you'll get better, or you'll realize that you're not going to get better, and one of those two will happen.
Yeah, there's a ceiling, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing as, like, if you were, like a track athlete, you know? It's, yeah. Like, eventually, like, you can train more, but eventually you realize, like, this is about as fast as I can go. And, like, so eventually, you'll keep getting better, keep taking that next step until you realize, like, you feel like you've hit about as high
as you
can. All
these other people have two legs.
I know.
We're not, we can't all be Usain Bolt.
Right.
That's true.
How do you... Oh, I had a question. It just left my head.
No, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, we're obviously very new players.
Yeah.
And Dragon's Maze is offering a new challenge to me personally. Mm-hmm. I like to play aggressively, you know, not only because I enjoy playing aggressively, but because it's easier for me because I'm not great at math.
It's easier for everybody, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody. Yeah, right. So now it's with the board state slowing down and everything. I'm definitely going to have to... be like, Maria, stop being an idiot. And how about you actually think about it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
More than like 2 minutes or a minute or whatever, where I'll just be like, I don't want to do it. You know, that's why getting into this game in the first place was a challenge for me, to even challenge me to do that kind of like even simple stuff. And I feel like it's helped me out that way. And now it's just going to hopefully expand more, or else I'll die in a blaze of glory.
Yeah. Hey, do you remember how do you... I'm just going to celebrate for a second how far you've come on doing combat math.
Thank you.
Maria, I don't think I've seen you get some combat math really, really wrong in like a couple of months.
Wow. Yeah. You know, when I first taught these guys magic, I must not have done a very good job, because at first they would like, they would have like creatures out, and their opponent would have nothing, and they'd be like, okay, well, go. You don't have any creatures. No reason for me to attack.
Right.
We've come a long way, baby.
Yep, we sure have. Do you guys have any memories from when you just started playing magic?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I do.
Back in the day?
Yeah, when I was a little kid, I remember we all thought this one card, Eternal Warrior, was super good. Because it says attacking doesn't cause a creature to tap. So we just play it on
the
a creature.
Vigilance.
We'd play it on a creature and just attack them like 10 times in one turn.
No.
Kill you.
I get it.
And then,
if it doesn't tap, you can just keep attacking.
Yeah, and we also thought X spells. One of my friends was like, you just choose. I was like, really? You just choose? Why wouldn't you just pick their whole life? I was like, wouldn't you just pick their whole life? Yeah. He's like, well, that's kind
of
rude.
I played a lot of games of Magic.
Like, this game's weird.
I mean,
that's kind of rude.
I remember we used to Dark Ritual and just like search for three swamps. We're like, swamp, swamp, swamp.
Oh, yeah.
Mana source. You go get mana.
Yeah.
It wasn't even that unfair. It wasn't even that unfair because then you're just like, you're like, all right, gray ogre, go. Skating on these, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And you play like a 7-mana 4/4 or something.
Nice. Well, back then, cards were so bad. I remember I had a Colossus of Sardia, and I just thought it was like the best card ever.
It's a 9/9 for 9. That doesn't even untap. That you have to pay 9 to untap.
Yeah.
I think it has trample.
I don't remember if it has trample.
It does. It definitely has trample.
Yeah, card's sweet. It was huge. Beat up force of nature. Just no lowly 8/8.
Who was also insane. 8/8 for 6? Are you crazy? Brilliant force.
I'm trying to remember like my first limited experience. I know that I just like lost very easily.
I took all the rares.
I played against the guy who beat me, I think. And his deck, like, I didn't realize it at the time, but, like, his deck was bad. But, like, I thought his deck was good because he beat me.
Right.
So, like, I took cards that were in his deck the next time.
Oh, no.
And they were just terrible again. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? He, like, beat me with, like, Salt Skitters in Time Spiral.
Oh, those guys are good. I like that guy. He's not good.
He's pretty bad. It's a 4-mana 3/4 that, like, fades out every time I play a creature. If you play a creature, it, like, blinks out until
exiles,
the next turn.
And then it comes
so it can
back
never
next
block,
turn.
Basically.
It's scary. And if anyone plays a creature, it runs away until the beginning
of
next
turn.
Too? Yeah. Oh, too? Yeah, it's, like, it's very bad.
But it's, like, aggressively costly.
So, like, I was just, like, this guy, like, beat me with them, so I just, like, took them, like, really high and then just lost.
Yeah,
like
a board of salts. They play one creature and your whole board would run away.
They're just very bad, you know.
I have a question for Matthias. You do some coverage.
I do some coverage of Star City, yeah.
Yeah, tell me what doing that is like.
Ooh, that is a long day. You watch Magic for like 12 straight hours, wow. And you have to talk about it, and you have to keep being interesting for 12 hours, and I'm not actually that interesting. Oh, so then I just start making things up, or, you know, like, you know, it's about fine. You talk to the person, you kind of during a break, you think of some questions, like, I'm going to ask this guy these questions on air. I don't know what he's going to answer to him. You know, you just have to, it's fun. A lot of times I try to do on air, I'll try to analyze what's going on in a match, because I feel like you have to think, why are people watching commentary? And a lot of people are watching because they want to get better. And some people are watching because they just want something, you know, they're looking for a show, and they want to watch a show, and that's entertaining. And I don't know if Magic's actually the best game for that. There's a huge amount of downtime in Magic.
Entertainment-wise?
I mean, the problem with Magic is that I think every third game is really boring. If you watch, you know... So when you watch Magic, first of all, there's a ton of time when people are thinking. And I can only make watching a guy go like this with his hand, you know, like I can only make it so interesting on commentary because it's not
interesting
at all.
Have you ever just made up some color about somebody?
That would be sweet. To make up some backstories about them.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, he drowned two infant children on his way.
He drove here and then sold his car just to buy the deck he's playing today. Like, he's got to win to make it home. You know, so like, that'd be a sweet story. Normally I know nothing about the people who are playing. So, you're just like, oh, this guy. And I say their names wrong sometimes too, and that's bad. But I don't actually know how to say their name. So, like, I'll try to ask them for it. Like, hey, how do I say your name if I get a chance to? But, doing commentary is fun. It's a really hard spectator sport because there's a bunch of downtime when people are shuffling decks, are thinking. And then, like I said, a lot of games really, you know, it's like, well, this person played creatures turns 1 through 4, and this other guy stuck on 2 lands. And,
right.
Well, the guy who played creatures won, and now we're going to shuffle up and play again. It's like, what can I say about that? Be like, well, that's the randomness of the game right at you again. You know, like,
it's like a coin flip, basically.
Sometimes you can play well and still lose. Like, right, okay. There's only so much. It's not interesting.
Sweet. All right, so I have a question for you guys. We talked about you guys being really good and about how you guys started out.
Yeah.
What,
using that loosely.
What was there? Do you have like one moment where you felt like there was one thing you did that made you like a lot better?
Mm-hmm. You mean like,
or is it game, like, was there like, one thing you realized or that you learned that improved your game a lot, or is it just more of like a gradual process?
I think for a lot of up and coming players, usually you have to be really competitive, or I shouldn't say you have to, but that really helps. And usually once you get that first taste of success, mm-hmm. a lot of people start doing a lot better because either they didn't have confidence in themselves, they weren't taking the game very seriously because they're like, I'll never be good at this. And then all of a sudden they top 8 and they're like, that wasn't that hard. You know, I could do that again. And for me anyway, once I started top 8ing, I just went to every tournament I could go to. I just wanted to win. And at that time, it was a really exciting time because, like, Sam Black and Owen Turtenwald and, like, a lot of really great players were going to PTQs. Yeah,
they're all from Madison, so they'd be at our PTQs.
Yeah, and, like, so we would intentionally, you know, like, we'd seek them out, you know, play a $20 team draft, expecting, you know, we're underdogs, sure.
You're paying $20 for an educational lesson.
Right, and it's fun. Most part. And it's That's fun. Cool.
And sometimes you win, and then you're not. Then you're
yeah, paid you for feel a like lesson. A badass, but. You know. You're like, like I and I just
kick your Tempest Owl.
One of my first top eights, I beat Sam for top 8. We were playing for top 8. I'm pretty good at tiebreaker math, and I did the tiebreaker math, and I said, you know, I think if we draw, we both get in. Well, Sam's like, let's just play, because I'm sure he saw me. He's like, I'm just gonna, you know, destroy this kid. I like crush him game one, and then he's like, okay, let's split. I was like, no, motherfucker, you know, like, let's play it out, you know, like, but I was like 18, you know, 17, 18, and that's when I first started playing competitively. But yeah, you just like, you know, what you were saying, when you get that fight or flight, I think that adrenaline and stuff, you really get into it. And plus, you know, I was always in sports and shit growing up, but I'm not that athletic. And so it's something you can excel at, and you feel like you can kind of control your own. Like, you see plays you made that if you hadn't done this, you would have lost, and like 90% of people would have missed it or something. And it's just like the perfect play, stuff like that makes you feel just great. And
I had I kind of got my first competitive thing was I was a pretty casual player, and used to qualify for nationals, which I don't really have anymore, by playing in regionals, which was this big, you know, there's like 8 of them in the country or something. And I was a pretty casual player. Like, I guess I was always a big game player. Like, before I played Magic, I played Bridge, so I wasn't exactly new to games, but I was pretty new to Magic. And I just, like, out of nowhere, top 4'd it, and I had a terrible deck, but, like, I ran well that day. Mm. And I think that got me interested in the game. I didn't do very well at Nationals that year, because, you know, I still were pretty new. But then I decided, like, I wanted to win a PTQ, and I, like, sat down with a couple friends, and I built proxy decks. So, like, I went over to Grand Prix, and I built proxy decks of every deck in the format, and we got together, like, twice a week and just played them all against each other. And, like, I think that made me a much better player, because I suddenly, like, it was the first time I actually understood a format. I was like, oh, this is why this deck's good, and, you know, these are, like, I knew the matchups between all the decks, and I kind of knew what cards were relevant in each matchup. And that actually kind of made me a better drafter, because I suddenly, like, I started thinking, like, I think about draft, like, I build a lot of decks. So, you know, I build a sealed deck. You start, like, realizing that decks aren't whole things. You start identifying, like, okay, these are the cards that match. These cards are good in this deck because of this. Uh-huh. These cards are good because of this. So even in your limited game, like, suddenly you understand, like, why a deck's put together if you play enough with decks. And I think, like, that experience for me is doing that for one season made me a lot better of a player.
Cool. Kyle, do you have a story?
Mine, I didn't really ever identify a time when, like, I could have realized. I mean, like, I won my first PTQ, like, before back in 2010, like, in the beginning. It was for Puerto Rico, San Juan. And I was, like, not very good back then. It was with that deck that you and Pat built. Yeah. It was, like,
you had a different experience than Dave and I.
Basically, so. This deck was, like, it was built, they built it like overnight in this extended season. It was very, very good, and no one knew about it. And like, I just got like handed the 75 cards to take to PTQ because no one was going. And the deck was like very, very unfair. Almost,
yeah.
And like, I won like very easily games I shouldn't have, like, bad against, because the deck was just like, it was like literally the deck winning. And like, I was just kind of, you know, standing next to it and like, hey, look what I can do.
It was like, that was your first PTQ top 8, wasn't it?
No, because I the one that Forrest top 8ed, and the one, there was another one. It was my third or something.
Why
like that.
Was it so good?
I mean, it was just, like, unexpected. It was, like, a red-green Scapeshift deck. That's a,
with aggro creatures.
It's a card that's like 4 mana. I don't know if you guys play extended or anything. No. It's 4 mana. You search your deck for, you sack any number of lands and search your deck for lands like that.
There's how it reads is 4 mana. If you have 7 lands in play, win the game.
Yeah, 18s them. Like base in modern.
Because you deal 18 damage. Do you know the card Valcut?
No.
There's an interaction, which basically says if you have 7 lands in play, win the game.
So the deck is basically just like this red green aggressive deck that was playing like Lightning Bolt and like Tarmogoyf and Bloodbraid Elf and like Umezawa's Jitte, and it just also had 4 mana kill you. You know, or like an instant win card for if you have 7
wow.
card.
Okay.
So it's like very powerful and very unexpected.
Okay.
Anyway, so like I go to this PT and like I think I'm hot shit. You know what I mean? And like, no. I'll be honest, like I was pretty overconfident. I played a deck in this format that was filled with like, I didn't test like very much at all. It was like a 3-deck format. And I picked like probably the worst deck and ran against the bad matchup 4 times in a row and just got destroyed. Like 0-4 drop. Like, just
last
dead.
Place.
Like actual last place drop. And that was pretty humbling. I was like, okay. I was like, okay, that didn't go so well. And then I go back and then there was that season that we like did the sealed cube for Scars.
Right, so then your second pro tour was both Dave and my first.
Well,
pro
what
tour.
Happened was we did that sealed cube for Scars and I felt like I was getting better. But, like, everyone had top-8 at PTQ that season except me, and I was kind of, like...
You top-8 at a GP.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then I 10-0'd the day one of the sealed with the GP, like, on no buys, and was like, okay, this is... It's like, going better.
So Kyle's second PT and was the same as Paris, which was David, both David, my first pro tour. It's kind of different, because, like, what is it? I won my 9th PTQ top-8, and yours was, like, your 14th or something silly.
Mine was, like, my 9th or my 10th as well.
So it's, like, by the time I finally got onto the pro tour, it was, like...
Yeah, we were all very.
We were
good.
All. I was ready to hit the ground running.
Yeah,
but
can I ask about playtesting at all? Like you were mentioning, you're going to go somewhere and you're going to playtest with some Canadians.
Yeah,
and you're going to just live in this house.
And
they don't
and
even play Magic. They're just Canadians.
They're just some Canadians. And the some game guys, comes some guys from Asia, and you know we're going to play some Magic cards. And,
right,
Canadians
some magic
really give you a new perspective on all the cards.
Wow. I just mean like you know what are you doing? You're living with them in a house for a week and not doing anything except playing and like eating up. Pizza rolls?
Probably pizza rolls.
You cook spaghetti like once.
Yeah, spaghetti's cost efficient. You know, you can go out to eat. You can order pizza. You don't have to eat pizza
rolls. Okay, look, I don't want to focus on the food here.
There's a lot. I mean, just pizza rolls.
You
is a
mentioned
much.
The pizza rolls first, Maria.
Okay, I'm
you
sorry.
You mentioned them.
Yeah,
so, like, so it's like, what are you? What could you possibly be doing for a week involving
right,
magic?
Right.
Well, so the justification for it, which is a terrible justification, is that, you know, first prize at the Pro Tour is like a lot of money. Well, not a lot, but it's like $40,000.
It's a lot of money for Magic Pro players
magic
who
pro players.
Don't have very lucrative jobs. Like, most Magic Pro players are like working subpar jobs.
Getting paid under $20 an hour.
Yeah,
almost.
Yeah.
For sure.
So well, like 30, like so, 10K is like a lot of money to most Magic players. You know?
But you're able to take the time off of whatever job you're doing to do this for a week, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not really.
That's, it depends what the job is.
I mean, a lot of it is like you work with a website or you have a sponsor is how a lot of people manage to pay for this stuff. But no, what we'll be doing for a week, especially the Pro Tour here, is like they intentionally put the Pro Tours right after pre-releases because once major tournaments start having the format, people start figuring out what the good decks are.
And
like, by the time, if like you go to your FNMs and like you start seeing these same set 6 decks all the time, which are like the best decks in Standard right now, like, so if you look back at the current Standard format, you know, the last Pro Tour was Standard, and the decks we were playing at the Pro Tour were different than what's currently being played in Standard because they put the Pro Tours immediately after the pre-release, so no one knows what's good. The deck I had for the Pro Tour was basically like Prime Speaker Bant, if you know that deck right now, but it was like a bad version of it because we hadn't, it wasn't completely optimal yet. But, so what we do is, I mean, this is Block Constructed. There have been pretty much no tournaments in Block Constructed at all. There's some on Modo. None of them have Dragon's Maze in it.
Yeah.
And so we have to figure out not only what is the best deck in the format, because no one actually knows. You can't look at who won the most recent tournament. You have to kind of figure out what the best decks are and then like what the best builds are of them. And that takes a long time. And then once you figure out what the best decks are, you have to learn how to play it right.
Right.
So that's a fair amount.
That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
It's
why you have a team of about 12 people working on it. You
usually spend like the first, like usually draft once a day most of the time.
We try to do 2 drafts a day. Drafts are something you can do without a whole group together. So a lot of people will take care of their draft, like most of their practice. I'll try to get most of my practice drafts done before I'm in California.
And you like, you spend like the first 2 days, like everyone's just brewing decks and like 90% of them are just awful. That's like my, they're just terrible. And it's funny how bad.
That's
like,
my role.
On, like, what was on it? Teams. In Scars of Mirrodin, we had this deck that had, I don't know if you played back then, there's a card called Scrapyard Salvo.
This is
pretty It's dead. Red, yeah. red, one, does damage to someone. Them were like artifacts in your graveyard. And we had
that's
like Shriekhorns, we were milling ourselves.
So I was like, I wonder how much damage terrible. I can deal with this card. I'm going to build a deck that puts artifacts in my graveyard as fast as possible. I'm going to try to burn them. And, like, I spent like, you know, a couple hours. I'm like, this is terrible. This card doesn't do anything. And then, like, all right, it's like, so what have you up to today? Well, I've reported Scrapyard Salvo is not a good card.
Like, we had, like, okay. I'm trying to remember, like, what was that deck that Matt had? The, it's like, Niv-Magus Elemental, like, with, like, we had a build of the Niv-Magus Elemental, and I think his quote on it was, like, he's like this deck is, like, it's, like, 5%, or it is, like, 95% terrible, 5% format breaking. And that's really what you're doing, is, like, you're trying to see if, like, any of these terrible decks are actually just insane.
So, I'll do an example using, RTR cards.
Okay. You guys
know these.
Sure.
So, like, I had a deck for the last Pro Tour, which this is a terrible deck. And so there's a card, you know, Gyre Sage, the Evolve guy, right?
Yeah.
So there's a card called Increasing Savagery that puts 5/1/1 counters on a creature, and it flashes back to put 10/1/1 counters on it. So I had a deck where you'd try to get a Gyre Sage into play, and then you'd Increasing Savagery him, you'd tap him for like 5 mana, then you'd play Burst of Strength to untap him, then you'd tap him for, you know, like 6 mana, then you'd flash it back, put 10/1/1 counters on him, then you'd Burst of Strength him, then you'd play a green Garruk, and you'd draw 17 cards, you'd untap him again, you'd put a Rancor on him and hit them and kill them. And I was like, this could be really good, and I built it, and it's terrible, you shouldn't play it at all. But like, I had to figure out that wasn't
so creative,
playable.
Though.
Because, right, because if it is playable, like, so that sounds terrible, but like, if that strategy is good, it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
So you have to try, like, I'm pretty sure this is terrible. So the funny part, like, when I brew decks is that I'm pretty good at coming up with original ideas, and I'm really bad at figuring out whether my ideas are good or not. So I typically just, like, hand people decks, I'm like, can you tell me if this is good? And they're like, nice. Like, what are you, like, no, it's not. I'm like, okay.
Have you ever hit gold, though?
We played our brew in Seattle? We played the green black deck in Seattle.
We built a smallpox Vengevine deck
in Modern. What was that blue green deck we built?
Yeah,
that deck was broken.
Kyle and I hit gold once. This was like the first time we kind of got on the Pro Tour. So we normally brew decks together. There was a blue green Scapeshift deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on that deck too.
Yeah. I mean, was it Dave and I played it at a PTQ? We were the only two people that played it at a PTQ. We went 2-0 in an 8-round event. We intentionally drew round 3 when we got paired up against each other, which is ridiculous. And then
unheard of, terrible idea. Everyone's like, you guys are retarded.
We went and got Subway, turned round 3, and then came back to the PTQ and both went out and top 8-ed.
Wow. The deck was very, very...
I mean, the deck had no... It was... Yeah, I ended up winning the PTQ there, and like, and then I like went to a Grand Prix in 9
we
of the
like,
day
we
one.
Like, there was
like, we didn't lose to anything.
How many people were playing that deck at that Grand Prix? The combined record on day one
was
like
33-3.
Yeah, something absurd.
So like...
Wow.
Once, and everyone, like, I've... Obviously, like, last 2 years I've been trying to make a repeat of that happening, and that hasn't happened yet, but, you know, it's like, there's like that dream when you design decks, like, once you just want to show up to a tournament where you show up with this deck and you're like, I have no bad matchups. I, you know, I'm 70-30 against everything.
Wow.
And like,
do you think it's kind of sad, though, that once that comes out, then everybody can know what it is, and then everybody takes it?
I mean, yeah, that is kind of sad.
I don't think it's that bad, because, like, if you think about it, like, every time you don't do that, you're doing that to someone else's deck. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, maybe I'm doing that, like, I'm playing my own, like, personal brew, like, twice a year at something like that. But, like, every other event, like, I'm just remodifying someone else's deck. And it's, like, in this age, you can't really avoid it because of, like,
coming up with the truly broken deck's really hard now. Yeah. The internet's pretty powerful. It used to be during the old Pro Tours, before Magic was on the internet, the reason, like, why you see, you know, like, these famous names, like, why John Finkel won so many Pro Tours or something was that... The internet didn't exist, so it was very common, not common, but like more common than now that a pro would show up to a pro. Like, if you were a PTQ winner and you didn't have a team, like, I'd show up with a deck which just beat everything. Because, like, no one else, like, if you didn't have a team, you probably didn't even know that this deck existed.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there was one Pro Tour in Berlin where Elf Combo was a deck. There's this Elf Combo deck, and, like, people in PTQs didn't even know Elf Combo existed, and this deck killed on, like, turn 2 or 3. So you'd show up and you'd be like, all right, you know, like, you'd play, like, some 3/3 for 1, ready to attack me, and I'd be like, turn 3, kill you. You'd be like, oh, I have no way to interact with that. And, like, yourself up, and then we do it again. And you'd be like, well, this sucks. And, like the Pro Tour used to have a lot more of that happen.
Yeah, okay.
And now, like, if there's a turn 3 kill, there's no way there's a turn 3 kill that people don't know about. Like,
right.
Like, someone knows that it's there. Wizards tries to not make turn 3 kills anymore.
You at least have the option to put hate cards in your deck, whether or not, like, you have them, you know.
But there's still great decks come out all the time.
No one breaks the Pro Tour as hard as they used to.
No, and that's good. You know, because there should be a deck that's so much better than everything else that it's like, you know.
It's a joke if you're not playing.
Right, because then, you know, you should figure that out.
The early Pro Tours used to be like casual people who were showing up with like creature decks of 2 and 3 drops, and like, then the pros would show up with like Dark Ritual Necropotence, like the original Pro Tours, and be like, oh, I'm playing Dark Ritual Necro, draw 4 cards, and you're playing like 2/2 attack.
Dude, Imperial Armor.
It's really funny when you watch like early Pro Tours. It's just like, you're like, this isn't.
The two people
they're not even playing the same game.
Like watching Mike Long play the combo deck versus the guy who's just playing like Bears and Imperial Armor.
Go.
But he's playing like Solteri, like 2/1 Shadow for 2, and then like an armor like +3/+3. And just like,
The other guy's like, just killing you on turn 4.
Combo off. Combos. Entertaining.
So. Wow, sweet. Well, I think I'm ready.
Yeah, I feel ready now. Megan?
I'm a pro.
I mean, like 3 minutes fun, most of it panic.
That's the takeaway.
That's the name of the episode.
That doesn't stop.
Is that true?
I don't know. Yeah, like if you start drafting, I mean, okay, so like this was a high stress situation, so maybe like you finally be like, fine, this team draft's okay, but then like if you get to the Pro Tour, like you do your first A-man draft on the Pro Tour, oh no, it's like all panic all over again. It's great.
Well, thanks for coming on our show, you guys. It was great
to
talk to some people who are the real deal.
With quotation with marks. Quotes, real.
Self-effacing Minnesotans, everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, if you guys want to get a hold of us, you can follow us on Twitter at MTAcast. Mm-hmm. We have a website, magicoftheamateuring.com, with a few shitty articles.
Remember sorry, Ben, it was great. They were talking about that guy who's a douchebag? Well, pretty soon we're going to have an article about how not to be a douchebag. So, check in for that.
And we'll have a rebuttal.
Yeah, from him.
Contact him for a rebuttal. You're not a douchebag. Please explain.
Counterpoint.
You can email us at magicoftheamateuring@gmail.com or message us on Magic Online. My name is horny_unicorny.
My name is Middle Schooler.
And we'll say hi.
And I have a Mac, so... Oh,
Megan, I have a Mac.
Maria, all right.
It's possible. All right, everybody, we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah, see you when you're all dead.
Bye.